A lot can happen in the next 3 years. Like a chatbot may be your new best friend. But what won't change? Needing health insurance. UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans are available for these changing times. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer budget-friendly, flexible coverage for people who are in between jobs or missed open enrollment. The plans last nearly 3 years in some states, with access to a nationwide network of doctors and hospitals. So for whatever tomorrow brings, UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans may be for you. Learn more at uh1.com.
Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. How to get 30, 30, how to get 30, how to get 20, 20, 20, how to get 20, 20, how to get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month? Sold!
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Hello, Egg Chasers. It's the Egg Chasers Rugby Podcast, the podcast about rugby that doesn't take itself or the game too seriously, back in the rugby dungeon for a second podcast. Because, yeah, all the other podcasters, they're like, oh, Six Nations is on, let's make sure we do an episode now. We've done that as well, in fairness. But we are bringing you another extra bit of content because we really do care about the grassroots game. And we're going to demonstrate that right now. JB's in the rugby dungeon with his OnlyFans bare feet on.
That's right.
Do you want me to take a good shot?
Why has this triggered something in my memory? Did you see the article that I shared about the guy with the OnlyFans page? No, the story.
The story.
A couple saw the OnlyFans page and ended up with like $5,000.
His wife suggested that maybe she could make some money for them by going on OnlyFans, and then he wasn't sure about her, understandably, going, no, I don't want people to look at you like that. And she said, what about feet? Yeah, feet's okay. And she said, you've got nicer feet than me. Let's paint your nails.
So she shaved up to the knee. Paint her nails.
And he made them a load of cash with his feet.
So there is a guy, apparently he's a very nice guy, normal guy, except there's one thing, which is his fetish for feet, right?
And you're talking about Rex Ryan, the former New York Jets.
Well, he got done for something like that. Well, not done, but there's some awkward recordings. So anyway, this guy does actually approach the England team for their socks, and the same guy approached me when all the foot fetish things started kicking off. So I don't know if he listens to the podcast. Normal guy. We all have our predilections. I don't know what to tell you. But yeah, they walk among us, Tim.
You do you. It's fine.
Yeah, yeah.
What you do in the comfort of your own room is none of my business.
Well, as long as you're transferring me cash. I have not accepted any cash for any feet.
So as I was saying, this is our sexual fetish spin-off pod episode. Uh-huh. This is grassroots. So I was going to say that the talk of the tackle law change has gone away. It was frustratingly very, very present on BBC broadcasts this weekend. That did annoy me somewhat. How much of the Wales Island build-up was dedicated to
the tackle height? They don't have a clue what they're doing. They don't have a clue what they're doing. I think now, people are sort of listening to the noise and they're parroting the noise, but they're not actually concentrating on what the substance of the matter is.
Right, so I was going to jump straight, if it's all right with you, Phil, jump straight to JB. Because JB's phone is constantly on the go, speaking to people. You're right, you're in the thick of what is going on at the grassroots level. What's happening?
Well, yeah, so let's just take this sort of back a step, right? So what is happening is every councilman and everyone who voted for this change is covering their arse by sending out a Ross Tucker Patreon post where Ross Tucker very articulately explains the whole journey of where they've got with this tackle law and how they arrived there. And it's wonderfully written, and it's a great bit of narrative writing because it just explains where they've been. Doesn't really tell you why we need to do this, just tells you where they've been. Mm-hmm. So if you read it, you end up reading something like, what do you reckon it is, Phil? What, 2,000 words?
Yeah, easy. It's a good 20-minute plus read. It's a good bit of content to digest. It might even be more than 2,000 words.
But people are not digesting it. So what they are doing is saying it's been peer-reviewed. What has been peer-reviewed? You know, the science is on our side. What science is on your side?
This is a fascinating element that's emerged in the last few years, hasn't it? This peer-reviewed, this science, this data, it's odd.
Yeah, I have no issue with the science. I think the science is absolutely rock solid.
Yeah.
But they're just not interpreting it right. So, well, no, they are interpreting it right. And this is the maddening thing, right? It's there for everybody to see. We have spoken about it. Ross has said on Twitter, and when I've spoke to him, he has said that the individual risk is acceptable. Let's just say that again. Let's say that again. So everybody going to their council meeting can understand what I am saying. The individual risk has not changed. It is substantially lower in the pro game. And it is
higher in the pro game. Yeah.
Sorry. Lower in the amateur game.
Than in the pro game.
And it is acceptable. Right, we need just to repeat that over and over again because people are not getting this through their thick heads.
And if it's not acceptable to you as an individual, you don't have to play.
Exactly.
No one is forcing you to play.
So why is it that this thing has come about? So I'm not going to talk about all the sort of more conspiratorial things, which I do believe, like the wanting to get rid of amateur rugby and the wanting to build a consumer base and all that. Mm-hmm. Let's just stick to the actual facts, the actual science. The reason World Rugby and the RFU have gone down this route, and this it blows my mind when I say this, but they'll admit it. They have admitted it. Is because the more people that are exposed to a risk, the less acceptable the lower the acceptable risk has to be. So they're taking a game which has been played for 100 years plus, and they're lowering the risk today. Yet the game hasn't changed. Why? What is it that you're doing? And they will say, because, well, so many people play this game, we need to lower the risk. And effectively, all it comes down to is a public health argument. I can't see any more substance in this. Now, I truly understand everything about it other than a public health argument, which is, well, you know, it's going to take up time with the NHS, it's going to take up work days, it's going to say, well, but it was ever thus.
They're also concerned about the lawsuits.
They're lying about that. Right. Well, if they, they're not concerned about the lawsuits. I mean, everybody with half a brain knows that an amateur rugby player is going to be mostly unsuccessful with a lawsuit, unless it is literally me telling you, as like a superior or someone in the club, get back on that field now.
But even if you're incredibly successful, if the RFU World Rugby are incredibly successful in the lawsuits, it could still cost them millions of pounds.
Yeah, but
that's what they're concerned about. Because I tend to agree with you that those lawsuits would be incredibly hard to prove.
Yeah,
the bar for success is so high because you would have to prove that there was negligence, as in the RFU specifically knew loads of information and deliberately withheld it from all the clubs. Yeah. Exactly.
The bit that I would be nervous about if I was World Rugby would be, and we spoke about this on a pod a while ago, they changed the concussion protocols. They've changed many times, but they changed it. So I remember I got knocked out with a massive black eye when I was like 10 years old, playing at Sedgley in the mid-90s. I had 3 weeks off, and until like the standard guidance for any concussion or certainly any knockout between, well, since forever until about the mid-2000s was mandated 3 weeks off. And then it changed to the concussion protocols, which actually led to some players playing again in 4 days. That would be the bit. Now, I'm not saying, but that is... It seems like the phrase I used ages ago was like they were behind the science at that point. At that point, they probably had a better understanding than they did in the 70s, 80s, whenever the three-week law rule came in. And they still chose to allow people back earlier, or at least put in different parameters to potentially allow people back earlier.
Yeah. But this maybe does obfuscate from what's going on, because what they're saying is this is the evidence.
The evidence doesn't show anything.
And the evidence doesn't.
Doesn't show anything. Not a single thing.
It is a fascinating study. You mentioned before, Tim. It's a fascinating study of something that's happened recently probably not just recently, but I think it's become more acute recently, where different sides of one argument will be presented the same piece of evidence, and people arguing one way will say, see, that proves I'm right. People arguing the other way will say, see, that proves I'm right, yeah. or it proves nothing. And kind of neither people are reading into it whatever they want.
Yeah, the public health risk is ridiculous, right? So let me just run you through the public health risk. So this is kind of how public health boards work. This is how they're twisted little minds go. But In some areas, it makes sense. So the idea is, hey, if I drive, the risk is acceptable. If you drive, it's acceptable. But what happens if we expand it over 1 million people or 2 million people or 70 million people? What happens? Well, the overall cases of people crashing and dying will always increase because the amount of absolute incidents that will happen. Okay. So people use driving as a good analogy. It's an absolutely dreadful analogy. No doubt there'll be people up and down the country trying to cover their arse for their terrible voting record using this analogy. The reason it doesn't work is a few reasons. Number one, driving and crashing, or should I say crashing, is not an intrinsic part of driving, right? You don't go out to crash your car. So that would be the first one. Second of all, driving's mandatory. Like, if you want a good quality of living, you probably need to drive. Not saying you can't do it without, but you probably do need to drive. It's a fairly important thing for a lot of jobs. And secondly, there are things in driving which can make it safer without necessarily any real effort on your part. For instance, seatbelts, airbags, that kind of thing, right? Mm-hmm. They're all perfectly normal. And actually, that's a great example of the public health thinking actually working. But then you apply it to rugby, which is exactly what they've done. I mean, you can't make this up, actually. When you think about it, it's so absurd. Unless the NHS been on the phone saying we desperately need to drop the amount of concussions? I mean, I don't know why this is now a thing. But
We need to drop the concussions of each team by 0.125 a season.
That's it.
So every 7 years, we need one fewer concussion per team.
Yeah. I mean, yeah.
Stat.
You do think, like, what kind of society do we want to live in? What, where we have to just run our day-to-day life in order to please the health service? No, thank you.
And the point you made brilliantly, and I will just direct you to the what's it called?
The offload
Rugby podcast. Rugby Pass Offload podcast, where JB and Ross Tucker had a very congenial debate coming from different angles, and I think you actually won Ross over to your side somewhat.
I don't think there's much winning Ross over, to be fair. I think he's probably speaking on side.
I don't think Ross Tucker... Right, so Ross Tucker, the person that's being held up and the name that suddenly everyone knows and uses. You guys have been talking about him for years and his good work. But he is not in favour of this law change. He didn't say that, but that's what I was reading between the lines when I listened to him. He's in favour of something being done. He's not in favour of what the RFU have proposed.
Yeah, certainly not the first iteration. Definitely not the first iteration. I don't think he says that explicitly.
No, he doesn't.
I think if you listen to our interview, there's a tacit acknowledgement that the only argument for this change is a public health one.
That's the point I was going to make.
Yeah, only argument for it.
I think what you got across really well, and actually Ross has even tweeted, I hadn't thought of this, but JB is absolutely right, and what he said at the time is that all the other variables like confidence, all the other benefits of rugby,
discipline, teamwork,
fitness, health.
I have no doubt he gets it. I have no doubt, but his job is, here's some science. You know, you do with this as you will. And if he works with the science that he's created, he thinks that you should drop the tackle height. He also says that, hey, if you don't bring people with you, it's pointless. Currently, the RFU have got 70,000 signatures against them and a shed load of votes, hopefully.
He mentioned this as an example of exactly how not to bring people with you, how to turn people against you immediately.
And that's it. Well, I mean, just don't change the game. Unless you're going to talk directly to the players who play it, and I'm not going to call them stakeholders, because stakeholders is a nonsense term which means nothing. The shareholders. Because if you pay your subs to your club then owns a part of the RFU. The RFU owns a part of World Rugby. Let's not forget who owns who here. World Rugby don't own the game. RFU don't own the game. Your club doesn't own the game. You own the game as a player, as someone who pays their subs. This stakeholder nonsense is exactly that. If you're not playing, shut up. It's not for you. Coaching, playing, volunteering, doing something with your club. Those are the people that the rugby authorities are meant to be serving. Not themselves, not their free expenses, nothing like that. It's players. So with rugby, contrasting it to driving, yes, the contact is mandatory. That's part of the experience.
Do you know Eddie Stevens, Rugby Rant to Banter? He used a brilliant phrase, which I'm gonna use, and you should take as well. I thought he put it brilliantly when he said, "What did he say?" He said, "Everyone talks about the risk versus the reward," and he said, "The risk is the reward.
It is. Exactly right.
It's really simple, but brilliant.
That is a good way of saying it.
Like, the seatbelt analogy doesn't work because actually changing your game fundamentally is like the equivalent of not driving or, you know, doing something far, far more inconvenient than simply belting up. And of course, the most important one is it's not mandatory. You don't have to play. And I think the final one, right, which really cooks this argument, is imagine if, like, everybody, and this to a degree has started to happen, gets into coastal water sports, paddleboarding. Now, paddleboarding is, again, perfectly safe, but if we have several thousand idiots on the North Wales coast paddleboarding every single day, there will be fatalities. And sadly,
100%, yeah,
there was a fatality recently around North Wales. And it's awful. But, you know, more people paddleboard, water is dangerous, right? It's that sort of thing. So, you know, with paddleboarding, you probably don't want everyone paddleboarding, right? Well, if we are to believe the propaganda coming out of the RFU, rugby participation numbers have halved. So if they've halved, have we not solved the problem anyway? I mean, that sounds reasonable, doesn't it?
Yeah, and there is an element of this that if you, you made this argument somewhere else, I don't think it was with Ross, I think it was after that, that if participation is falling, that has the, well, it achieves the desired effect of reducing concussions and reducing overall risk. It has other related collateral effects that are negative, but that's not necessarily, like, if you're looking at it from a pure risk point of view, fewer people playing means fewer chance of head, it's the same chance but fewer overall head injuries.
Yes, I guess you'd be looking at rugby, hours of rugby played on the weekend, and if that's dropped too, I mean, there's no good argument for it, really. So then you come down to this absolutely perverse,
well, that's only as you say, if your equation is X equals Y, and no other variables are allowed.
Yeah, because you've got two metrics, right? You've got, you know, concussions per rugby hour. Okay, well, we know what those are because of the studies. And then, I guess, if you want to scale that up and increase the amount of concussions, you need more rugby hours. If you've got less rugby hours, who cares? Now, we've got this horrible mindset of let's grow the game. I will never say that again because I'm now completely convinced I don't want to grow the game. I want people to play it who want to play it, and I don't care if you want to play a soft version of it. I don't care if you don't want to get your hands hurt. I don't, you know, if that's the sort of game you want to play, there are other games for you. Go and play that one. Because by growing the game, according to the logic of the public health lobby and the RFU, means you've got to lower the acceptable risk. Well, thankfully, the RFU have done a great job of getting rid of players. But are we saying we want to grow it for the sake of it? Or are we saying we want to grow it because the things that rugby entails are deeply special and important to us? We get a lot out of it. But ironically, the more that we grow it, the more of those special things we're going to take away from the new participants.
Yeah. Well, I'd also argue, and this is the context in which I see rugby at the minute. I've with a 15-year-old son, I see that there, and I've having watched him grow up, I see there is a massive need and a hunger in young men to have outlets like
rugby. Of course. And I don't think people are very comfortable with that. We've been over that one before. Here's some news. Bill Sweeney's been calling people up. Bill Sweeney reached out to me not so long ago for other things. This is the way he operates. He sort of tries to get people on side. He's a very, very convivial guy. If you ever speak to him, he's very sort of smooth and, you know, he's easy to talk to.
I'm sorry to do this on the podcast. I'm just going to tell you something. I'm going to turn the microphones down.
Yeah, sure.
Yeah.
But that does stack up because of where he's from.
Wow.
Oh, my word.
Yeah. Sorry, that's a really annoying thing to do. But I've been.
First cousin?
I keep.
No.
Doesn't matter. Okay.
All right. So.
Yeah.
Yeah. So he's been calling people who are very, very involved in this fight against this tackle change to try and get them on side. And do you know what he's saying? He's saying, basically, he's not in favour of the changes. So this guy.
What?
Right, has thrown his council underneath. Well, he's made the council vote for it. He's then calling around people who are involved with fighting the changes to say, "Do you know what? Yeah, I was never really in favour of all this."
I can give you 700,000 reasons why he's doing that.
And I'm thinking, like, just be careful with this guy because he's obviously said something to the council. He wants them to go in one direction. He's trying to sort of pacify the resistance by sounds like deceiving them. So a very, very, very bizarre bloke. We are going to have our meeting for Lancashire.
Yeah, this is what I want to get into. Right, so we've got an update. So nothing really has changed beyond like a really good... I think you gave the community game argument really well. Ross Tucker, actually, I heard him being very, very understanding of what you were saying. And that's really, there's not been a lot of development since. So now we're getting into all these meetings, which are starting to happen, which the one for Lancashire is at Liverpool St. Helens on Wednesday night.
And I'm looking forward to anybody trying to educate me about the science. I mean, I can't wait.
That's what they're going to do. They're going to spend most of the meeting.
Best of luck.
Trying to sell it.
Yeah. And they're going to have no joy on this at all because, unlike them, I've actually spoken to the scientists that put it all together. And I think I've got a far better understanding than they have. And they just keep on pushing out the same article because they don't understand what they're doing. Now, there are bigger crimes, would you believe it, than voting for this change. And I think the biggest crime that the council have to answer to is not understanding their constituents, not standing up for them, not standing up for the game, not being able to communicate why the game is important. And this is why they've ended up in the situation that they are. And if they dare tell you, this goes to anyone now going to their county meetings, they dare tell you they're future-proofing the game or something nonsense like that, just remind them, they did such a bad job representing people that they know, spent their lives around, could easily consult, and apparently are part of that actual cohort. They did such a bad job of representing them. What sort of arrogance would it take to think that they know what the best options are for 8-year-olds currently playing tag rugby in 10 years' time? They seem like the least qualified people to future-proof the game. So future-proofing doesn't work, the science doesn't work, the reasoning for it doesn't work, growing the game, it's not... I mean, what are you going to grow? What are you going to grow? Like, a version of netball. As a head coach in my league referred to it, it should be called rugby ball. And he's got a point, because you're just going to hit contact, you're going to offload, it's going to be much more free-flowing. It'll be lots of things, but it will not be rugby. It will not be rugby.
How do you think that meeting is going to go? Before you get there, because I've got an image in my head of how it's going to go, and I've my sense is that you're going to come away feeling incredibly frustrated, like you weren't able to be heard because there were too many voices talking about too much crap, and they spent loads of the meeting trying to convince you of why they were right.
Yeah, I would like to get a little bit of time to talk. I'm sure they'll try and limit that time, so you need to be very concise with your points, and the points are basically this. Lowering the tackle, lowering concussions in our league from a theoretical 19.6 to a 16.2 is not my idea of safety. You know, if 19.7...
How many teams are in your league?
I think 12.
All right, well, I'll crunch the numbers and give you the numbers for your league so that when you go and talk about it, you can say...
Well, we'll just use the actual numbers.
No, but those numbers, the 19.7 to 14.4 is based on 14 teams.
Yeah, but there are 14-team leagues in Lancashire, so, you know, it doesn't really matter. So it can't be that. So other changes have to be coming down the road following that. So you need to make a stand right now. And also, the French trial was had other things like no double tackles, it had rules around. So we're not even looking at the reduction of the French trials. So why are you doing it?
Have you noticed as well that there's holes all of a sudden in this foolproof argument that they love it in France? There's just holes being blown in that bucket all the time.
It's just not true. It's just not true.
Yeah.
People are desperate not to play level 7 in France. Desperate.
And they're not enforcing those rules as they are, from what I gather. The coaches hate it, the players don't like it, they're not really enforcing it. It seems like a...
Well, it's come from a very sad place, this set of rules. Because
yeah, of course.
It was four guys dying in 1 year. Now, they say from head injuries. I mean, I get it if it's four guys every year, but four guys... I mean, I don't know how this came about. We've never had a year like that in English rugby.
Not a decade.
I'm sure.
Like that.
No, but you do understand it was the like things like Matt Hampson and a couple of spinal injuries as a result of scrums that prompted the scrum safety engagement to be changed.
Yeah, scrum is probably a good example of changes for the better and for the worse. So for the better, well, we've not had another Matt Hampson, so that's obviously a great thing. Mm-hmm. For the worse, though. The slower you make the engagement, the more deliberate, the more processed you make it, the more focused the athlete needs to be and the less people can do it. And the example I give is, say, if you look at a sport like wrestling is actually really, really safe because they remove all of the bits from wrestling I'm not talking about WWE, of course. I'm talking like the Olympic style, right? Or freestyle wrestling. They remove all the dangerous bits, like all the locks, all the snapping of joints, chokes, so on and so forth, right? And because of that, you've just got these absolute mutants who are incredible at cardio, incredible at strength. And if you're not that sort of athlete, you can't wrestle. There is no room for, the jiu-jitsu guy or the judo guy. It's just that. And it's the same with scrimmaging now. So at the very top level, all of these laws have meant that because of the engagement process, you've got these, 6 foot, well, I was going to say 5 foot by 5 foot by 5 foot, but they're more like 6 foot by 5 foot by 5 foot now. They're absolutely enormous, and we'll never go away from that. So it shows, as you make the rules more specialist, the athletes too get more specialist.
I also think the scrum's a perfect example that actually proves your fundamental point, that it isn't an issue in the amateur level.
Yeah.
Because again, I refereed an under-15s game today. Loads of scrums. Not a single collapse.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass f-? So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Here's a cool fact. A crocodile can't stick out its tongue. Another cool fact, you can get short-term health insurance for a month or just under a year in some states. United Healthcare short-term insurance plans are designed for people who are between jobs, coming off their parents' plan, or turning a side hustle into a full-time gig. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage with access to a nationwide network of doctors and hospitals. Get more cool facts about United Healthcare short-term plans at uh1.com.
Phil, you've played in levels even up to national one. There's hardly ever a collapse when you watch the international rugby. It happens a lot more.
Mm. Yeah, the collapse is one of those big things that you've spoken many times about the divergence of the higher level game, the pro game, and everything else. The scrums is a great example because in the pro game, and I think it's my intuition tells me it's got a tiny bit better recently, but for the longest time, and it's still not great, but for the longest time, you would often get two or three resets before you get a live scrum in the program.
Do you know where that is?
National level.
Do you know why it was that they used to collapse so much?
Partly gamesmanship.
Because it was a lottery, they could win a penalty?
Yeah.
No, the reason was, and this was discovered by an aerospace manufacturer.
Wow.
When they were engaging, this is a study in France. So what they did, just a bit of background, is I want to say the aerospace company... Come back to me, not Dassault. It was another one, Thales, or however you say it. They built a scrimmaging machine for the French hydraulics.
I've heard of that.
Yeah, and it could replicate all the other teams, and it gave them data back. And the data was they were hitting the scrum so hard, it wasn't that they were games; they were bouncing out of opposition and then collapsing. So they changed it.
That was a big thing. That was changed in maybe 2015 or so.
Yeah.
The hit. Even more recently, there's still been huge numbers of collapses. And at the elite level, I think more of it is to do with, certainly these days, I definitely agree it was the hit. More of it was to do with gamesmanship. If you were on the opposition's line and you wanted a penalty, well, surely you're not going to collapse because you've got a good attacking ball, are you? Yeah. Therefore, the collapse must be the defensive team.
If you're getting... I've been in a scrum. I've played hooker when we've done this. So I've been I've been one of the people diving there with their putting their head on the deck. You're getting pumped in the scrum, and you just go, "Run, take this down," and it becomes 50-50 then.
Yeah. Yeah.
Actually, you're guaranteed to get a penalty if you don't go down. If you go down, you might get the odd one.
Yeah, I've done this in a playoff final. So I was up against a guy who you know, Phil, called Sammy the Snake. What was the highest level that he played?
He played probably tier 3.
So tier 3, I'm in a tier 7 playoff looking to get to tier 6.
He's playing for Eccles at the time.
He's playing for Eccles. He comes down the first two scrums. Yeah. In my head, I'm like, I'm not going to give him even the chance to beat me up. We're going to collapse it straight away. So first one collapsed, second one collapsed. We won two penalties, and all of a sudden the ref is on my side. And after that, it was just walk in the park because he can't be aggressive. He can't do anything, really. At that point, it's won.
Yeah,
so there are things to be done.
That's very much the gamesmanship. But other than you in playoffs, JB, you hardly ever see it when you watch lower level rugby. Hardly ever.
So going back to the meeting, what are your expectations and hopes?
I don't know. I've never been to a meeting like this before. My hope is, speaking to as many people as I've spoke to around the game in Lancashire, that the strength of feeling will still be high. Now, I think people have been a bit fatigued with the whole thing now, and I think they're thinking, yeah, we'll just accept it, or you know, something will happen. And I don't think it's going to be as heated as it would be if we did it 2 weeks ago. But hopefully there is going to be a lot of heat there. There's a lot of good senior rugby people there who will have a lot of views. And I think it'll probably end up, hopefully, with us saying, no, you're going to have to go back and redo this. I mean, I personally, even because I'm a little bit more unreasonable than other people, I want to see my councillors deselected anyway now. I mean, the more I think about it, the more incompetent the vote was. And it wasn't just the vote, it was the misunderstanding of the game, the misunderstanding of the players. Who they're meant to represent, by the way. I mean, that's the biggest crime of all. They're meant to represent us. They're not here, I'm sorry to say, make the same points over and over again, to represent the future beneficiary who does not yet exist.
The imaginary future beneficiary. I like that line from your letter.
But it's exactly what they're thinking. So that's not their job. It's to represent me and my friends and my club. Not the people that don't play it, nothing like that. And they didn't do their job. So because of that alone, I think they should go. I think they should all go. And that's what I'll be pushing for, regardless of if they want to rescind it. I'd like to make them rescind it and then go, but I don't know what the... I mean, I don't know how much power we have. I have no real idea.
I think the best chance at stopping it completely is forcing the RFU into a special general meeting.
Which will happen.
And if that happens, it's not this thing is not going through.
Yeah, no, that is happening. That is 100% happening. There are enough clubs. That will happen. But I just want... I just think we need to sort... At a local level, what really boiled my blood this weekend is a friend of mine had hospitality with the council. And I had a few pictures of him and some of the councilmen. I'm like, these guys are living up on our money, right? On our money. And I'm fine for them to do that. I actually always think that the council job should almost be like a reward for good service to rugby. But as soon as you betray rugby, the thought of them drinking on our money, having their little dinners and their tickets, it boils my blood because they've let us down and they've betrayed us all. So they need to go regardless. They need to go. I think the biggest reason they needed to go is because they couldn't get in the public square and mount a muscular defence of rugby union. And that for me is criminal. That's why they've got to go. If you can't mount that defence, let someone else who can do it. And I reckon when you look at the player participation numbers, you'll see the ladies' game is doing fine. That's sort of growing. The men's game is dying. And I think one of the reasons the men's game is dying is because nobody truly loves it. No one who cares truly loves it. And if you don't love it, how are you going to promote it? How are you going to argue for it? How are you going to make sure that people are coming down and remain enthused? At the moment, it's all negative, and that's because these guys who are in charge of the game really do not care about it. So they should move aside.
Or at least they are... Because I think a lot of these people are really good rugby men.
Were?
I mentioned on last week's podcast.
I tend to agree, and that's why it's so disappointing.
So what I'm saying is maybe it's that the lure of all of the trimmings that you get from that role was enough to be swayed by the people that were telling them what they should think.
Yeah. Do you know, one of the conundrums in my mind, which I can't get over, is people accuse these guys of being like, what do they say, 62 old farts or 54 old farts or something like that, right? There's some derogatory to
it. That was a Will Carling thing from back in the day.
Yeah, but that sort of still kind of is the, you know, male stale and pale or, you know, they're out of touch. Now, in my mind, that's actually a virtue because I would like to think that we're sending these guys over to the council who remember the history of their club, remember who played before them, know who are playing now, know what's important. And maybe it's that intransigence to change which conserves the game. But for them to be so radical, I just don't understand that. I don't think you can say that they are, you know, just out of touch old men in the way that they're painted, and for them to sort of do this. That's why it's so surprising to me.
Exactly. So the way it should operate is, if the RFU want to go off and be radical, say, and try and take
progressive change,
that's the role of the council, just to go, whoa there.
Yeah.
Well, there, we're representing people that play.
That's it.
Sport. Meant- so just, you know, actually, we're telling you with one voice. No, just calm that a little bit, and then it's kind of the that's when you have. That's how the distribution of powers work in America with the Senate and Congress and the judiciary. And when one goes too far, the other two are there to pull them back. And that's the role of the council.
And people saying like, oh, it's a terrible way to govern the game. Well, in my mind, if they did their job properly, it'd be a great way to govern the game. So it leads me to think, are they there because they're good rugby people, as we keep on saying? I mean, some of them undoubtedly will be. Or are they there because they're just really good politicians? Like, did they leverage their influence in the ladies game or the community game or the Lancashire Diversity Project? I mean, how is it that it has come to this? Who are these people? And I think that needs some real scrutiny.
I think it is time served, and it's almost like a there you go, there's your reward for time served. Because yeah. I know two of them, and Terry Burwell, one of the Hampshire councillors, former Newbury DOR, and he's a really good guy. And a guy that used to be a teacher, one of the two Gloucestershire ones, is a guy that used to be my boss when I was a teacher. And he was always involved in England under 20s and or under 18s and for years and years. So he did lots of stuff in the sport. So these guys have got really good rugby pedigree.
Yeah, it's interesting, right? So there's a guy in Didsbury Talk H who is the classic sort of guy you'd want on the council, because shows up to... It shows up to the opening of everything, sorts everything out, everything, you know, the trains run on time, you know, everything is done. But he's a very reasonable man. And, like, you know, everything's going to be compromised. You know, somehow he manages to please everyone. And maybe that's the sort of individual you need to get scouted. You don't need the unreasonable, boorish people such as myself. Maybe you need more reasonable people. But that is that reason that said, oh, yeah, well, guess we'll just keep all. All parties happy. Let's vote this through. But I don't know. I can't understand how these people who are meant to represent us have come to this conclusion.
So is the meeting on Wednesday more a chance for you to chat to more people from other clubs than it is to actually address the room? And
yeah, well, I'm thinking of making like little fact sheets of my own and distributing them before the meeting as they come in. Just like, you know, here is the actual facts. Here's what you need to know. Do with that what you will.
You're not going to make some... big tobacco posters.
Oh,
say,
God.
Say the councilmen are like big tobacco.
Yeah, we won't be doing that.
Do you know what? Because there will be lots of appeals to authority from the councillors, I imagine, on Wednesday night. So don't forget to preface anything you say with, if you want my full thoughts on this, you can read my Rugby Pass article or listen to my interview with the scientist behind this move, Ross Tucker.
Correct.
Say that first. Appeal to authority all over the shop.
Well, you know, I genuinely think that my conversation with Ross Tucker will probably make me the most qualified person in that room to discuss the science.
I imagine it would. Oh, Tim, what have you done?
I've just accidentally turned on JB's foot warmer.
I have a foot warmer in my office here when it turns into an office.
Got to keep the moneymakers.
Exactly.
Yeah, only fans.
Because the podcast is all about Six Nations and whatnot, did anything happen in Broughton Park under 14s this week?
Under 15s.
Under 15s, sorry.
Played our local rivals, Trafford Metrovic.
Don't like the tone of your voice.
No, it was good. Do you know what we had? We had a Warrington Wolves scout at our game.
Did you?
Interesting.
And what was he looking for? What did he like?
So we have a couple of lads. We had a couple of lads from our team who went over and played with
Waterhead?
St Anne's in Oldham. Rugby league team out of season, and then they obviously got on with those lads quite well, and a couple of rugby league lads have come to play for us, and so it's quite a good little thing going on with the two clubs, league and union, and so I don't know if that's how this Warrington guy came to hear of it, but we've also just got into the Lancashire Cup semi-final, so the two things may have come together. Anyway, this Warrington Wolves guy was at the game.
Did he say hello?
Yeah.
Was he picking your brains on who's good, who's bad?
Well, I was refereeing, so I didn't really have the chance. He was chatting to some other people. But anyway, but no, it was good because we had the Lancashire Cup quarterfinals last weekend. We called up our local rivals and said, right, you've got a big squad. Should we have a game where we give lots of minutes to the guys that were on the fringe? So we did did a game in thirds. The final third was first team. And the first two were sort of testing the depth of the squad, getting some minutes, playing people in new positions, trying some new combinations out. Anyway, 52-0.
To
Broughton Park.
Ah, oh, there we go.
Yeah. Easy.
What a lovely end to that story.
So, Rafi Quirk's Broughton Park against Steve Diamond's Trafford Metrovic.
only one winner. So,
good bunch of lads.
I'm glad you started off with a bit of a rugby league tale, because there is some more rugby league news in local rugby. Did you see the team that Wigan put out this week?
Wigan first yes. team in level seven?
Seven, yeah. So they are the league adjacent to us.
So what was it? This was inside centre, Sean O'Loughlin, yep. Owen Farrell's uncle.
Yes.
Former
of course
Wigan
it
legend.
Is, yeah.
It is, yeah.
Former Wigan legend. And outside centre, Terry...
No, Thomas Lulawai.
Thomas Leilua.
Is it Lulawai?
Not entirely sure.
I would say it Lulawai.
Okay.
But I'm not going to say it again, because Lulawai might be someone completely different.
No.
Leilua,
yeah.
Thomas Leilua.
But another Wigan legend.
Yeah.
So maybe Lulawai. Yeah.
Two Wigan Rugby League legends playing for Wigan Rugby Union.
So what happened is their sons play like the under whatever it is level. And, you know, they were drafted in to help the first team. Not that it did help much. Lulawai scored a try, but Eccles prevailed by 2 points.
Really?
Yeah, Eccles turned them over. But we played against Martin Gleeson and Sean Long not so long ago, and they played for Oral. So they stepped down and went to Oral.
And obviously Gleeson, and Long, because Long was coaching at Quinn's for a while, wasn't he?
That's right.
Gleeson, obviously Wasps and England.
Well, Long had a little stint at Preston.
Yeah.
Sulphur City Reds. He did something with Danny Cipriani. Whether that was at Wasps or Sale, I can't really remember.
But you could be seeing Sean O'Loughlin and Lulawai Leilua seeking some rugby union defence coach money.
Well, I mean, that is the natural progression of things.
One local result I did see, like Sedgley Park didn't play, but their top of the table rivals in National 2 North
filed and lost. Did they?
Ooh.
Who was that against? I didn't check.
Was it Otley?
Wow.
So that put Sedg in control. Is that right?
So I think, I'll just double check now, because... even though Sedge were unbeaten and Fylde up to that point had only lost to Sedgley, Fylde were top of the league because they had plenty of bonus points, more bonus points, but also a game in hand at that point. So yeah, Otley, away at Otley, tough place to go away at Otley.
That's a proper old rugby club, isn't it, Otley?
It is. It's cool going there.
Is it as cool as Firswood Waterloo? Because that's one of my favourite places to go.
It's that kind of place.
Is it?
Otley has the famous North of England in the 70s or 80s beat the All Blacks at Otley.
That's quite cool.
And they used to...
And it's hosted a World Cup game as well.
Is it anywhere near the Otley Run?
Well, the Otley Run is north, so that's Headingley. It's, if you follow that road for another, 10 miles, 15 miles.
15 miles of drinking?
Now, the pub's in the centre of Headingley. There's a pub every 100 metres. Mm-hmm. As you get closer, further away from Headingley, you're probably talking a few miles between pubs.
Well, you know, get the steps in.
I'm sure back in the 1990 sort of era, I'm sure there was one of the England players was Otley.
It wouldn't surprise me.
Mm.
Sedgley did play, actually. They beat Sheffield Tigers. So that puts Sedgley... So Sedgley are now top, but only by 1 point, even though Sedgley are unbeaten and Fylde have now lost two. Sedgley are only 1 point ahead.
I did love that. So the England team that got to the 1991 World Cup final, there were players, as when they were playing for England, like Wade Dooley was Preston Grasshoppers.
Yeah.
It was cool.
Because that was obviously before the Premiership, as we know it now.
Before
professionalism.
So they'd have had to go to play for County, and from County they'd go to North England, and then North England they get selected for the English team, which is an old school way of doing it. Well, I lost my first league game since 2019.
Did you?
Does that
mean you're in trouble against the metropolitan, densely populated, massive... catchment area of Didsbury is head to head in a top of the table tussle with the parish of Tarleton?
Well, let me explain our situation. So we went to Aspel this weekend, and no word of a lie, we lost by, I think, we needed three tries to come back into it. So we got roundly hammered. It was like 34 14 or something, right?
Oh, you said you were missing a few boys.
Yeah, but my view is if you pull on the Tokic first team shirt, yeah, that's the first team. I have no time for these teams that whinge about their availability. Yep. It is what it is. You know, the boys that played are the first team. That's the end of it. So we got roundly hammered. Aspel had some of the best players I've seen at this level in a long, long time.
Really? What positions?
So we knew we were in trouble when they got the ball. They come on at incredible speed. And all of a sudden, their 13 stopped dead, looked over his shoulder, threw like a double miss pass over our on-rushing defence into the hands of this winger and just screeches in. And I'm like, oh, that's a problem.
That was quite good.
Yeah, that was really quite special. And then the next try that we conceded, then we went and scored. So we had, you couldn't pin them down. So when we had the ball, we weren't too bad. Mm-hmm. There was no jackal threat. There's nothing like that. We had line-out drive, scrums. Everything went reasonably okay. We worked our way to get to, like, I think we went ahead at one stage. And then their winger got the ball. And now this winger scores. I can't remember if he scored one or two. Or he might have got a hat-trick, actually. So his second try, he just dances around everyone and scores. I'm like, this guy is very good. He cannot have the ball again. Third try, he chases it. They kick to the corner, like crossfield kick, score. And he pulls his hamstring. If he hadn't pulled his hamstring, I think we'd have been in the red by about 50 points.
Wow.
I mean, that's how serious.
It was 31-13 was the final result.
31-13.
We missed both of our conversions.
So what kind of player was he? Was he big?
Fast, steppy. Yeah. So the thing with Aspel is they have a load of lads who play rugby league.
Yeah.
And this weekend was the preliminary round of the Challenge Cup. So they're actually missing a few. So they've got this like phase of the season where they're incredibly strong.
Yeah.
And they put in a lot of work, I think, in keeping these rugby league lads in. And you can just tell by the way that they play.
But yeah,
so their loosehead prop was like ex-Wigan. I want to say ex-Wigan. The 13 is ex-Wigan Warriors, like 7 appearances. Mm-hmm. Gateshead Thunder. Just proper good players.
But the thing is, you must have been at least comforted by looking at the other results from the league when you realised you'd lost.
Well,
top of the table.
Meanwhile, yeah. I think it's Red Rocks where West Park St Helens play, led by the legendary Paul Arnold.
Arnie.
And, of course, Morris Forsevalu turned over Tarleton.
Nice.
So
they've done you a favour.
They've done us a huge favour, and apparently they won with the last kick of the game, 50 metre penalty.
Wow!
So absolute scenes.
So Arnie.
Well, yeah, I call him after every game to see how they've done.
However, ooh. Tarleton and Didsbury Tok H are in a tussle at the top of the table, but it's not just a two-way tussle now.
This might
be one of the most exciting leagues in all of domestic rugby in England, because going away to Warrington, a proper... Oh, this is like, couldn't get a more rugby league, rugby union match. Warrington 19, Liverpool St Helens 23. Puts Liverpool St Helens with a game in hand over Didsbury, level on points with Didsbury.
Right, yeah. So game in hand, it gets worse, right? So, yes, that is absolutely true. That is a thing that happens. So, Andy Northey's Liverpool St Helens are playing
Axe
us this weekend.
Oh, that's a hell of a game.
Yeah, and then weekend after that, we've got Tarleton. And Aspel are fairly confident that the squad that they've finally got together are going to stay together. Aspel have got both Tarleton and LSH at home, and LSH have still got to play Tarleton. Permutations everywhere. So, we're not out of it. We're just nowhere near as comfortable as we hope to be.
And when does the season conclude?
Six games time.
25th of March.
No. When does my rugby career conclude? Six games time.
No, JB does not. JB's Didsbury Tok H does not have a game on the final weekend of games. The final weekend, Liverpool, St Helens, and Tarleton are playing. Didsbury Tok H, that's when their extra game isn't played. So your JB's final game is on Super Saturday.
I know.
Oh,
I know. Tell you what, this is one of the best.
Are we going to have to not go away and come to Didsbury Tok H for a massive rugby union bender instead?
Well, we might have. We might exactly have to do that. Also, I've got to get a unseaworthy boat onto the water by April 4th, so I might not be able to spare any weekends anyway.
Weekends cash.
Anything.
Have you got your boat insured yet?
Oh.
No.
So, final weekend. So, it could come down to this. Well, no, so the final weekend for Didsbury. the penultimate weekend for the league.
Oh, also, I think Widnes have got to play LSH, and Widnes are going great guns.
I was going to say, Widnes go to LSH, Tarleton go to Aspel, who just beat you, and you're at home to Sefton, who look like they're a team that you should beat.
I'm not saying anything, because one of the things the Aspel have said is, bottom. You said on your podcast, you've got Aspel and then two big games. Should never have said that, and I apologise.
You shouldn't
for
have said that.
So yeah, so you know, I tell you what,
is that printed out and pinned up in the Aspel dressing?
Podcast that.
Well, there you go. So I think Widnes seem like they're doing awesome at the moment, and they can play beautiful rugby. So I think that they will do LSH. I don't know how Tarleton and LSH pan out. We just need to beat LSH, and LSH are going to have their hands full against Aspel if Aspel come out with the sort of performance that they did against us. So, what a league. I tell you what, if you're talking about Six Nations this weekend and not ADM level 7, I don't know what you're doing with your life. I really don't.
Before we depart this, I just need to find out how my boys got on.
Marlow.
How did Marlow go? See, I've been so engrossed with level 7 this weekend.
Yeah!
Big win.
Again.
44-12 against Milton Keynes.
Have that.
That's three on the bounce for Marlow. Four out of the last five. And in the table, that means Marlow in the counties one tribute, Southern North are second.
Chin of three
are ahead of them.
Oh, I hate Chin of three. Aylesbury didn't even play. So
I was just looking up Aylesbury's fixture.
Yeah, we can't really talk about them this week.
Never mind.
Good stuff. Right, that's the rugby you really care about. If you really want to bother, if you listen to this first, if you really want to talk about Six Nations and all that, then fine. Otherwise, nice one.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.